Hi everyone, it's Megan here and welcome to the Fast Start Action bonus call. It was a lovely small group of you who were super fast in joining the program and getting access to this call. And we've got a number of you on the call and a number of ladies sent their apologies because, work. So they will get the recording. So this recording, I'm going to put in a special... actually, I've got to work out how I'm going to do it. I'll probably just stick it in a special Dropbox folder and give you all access. And I would just ask that you don't share this call with anybody. This is just for you. Super, super special inside info around my journey that is for your ears only. So I'd really appreciate if you respect that and just keep it for yourself. So what I thought I would do is I sat down and went through which of the mistakes, because of course in an 18-year corporate career there are so many, would I want to share with you. And I'm going to go through the highlights and then let's have some discussion for the ladies here on the phone, anything that you want me to drill further into. So I think I'll give the high level, and then we can drill down on the things that are, of most interest. So how does that sound, guys? I'm just going to riff, and we'll see where we end up.
Sounds great.
And then, yeah, awesome. All right.
Sounds
so
good.
If you have any background noise, star 6 to mute. If you don't, it's all good. It's only a very small group of us.
How do we mute again? Can you just remind us, Megan?
Star 6.
Thank you.
Yeah, star 6. Okay. Oh, I hope it's going to be juicy. It was juicy for me going through and writing it all down. All right. So biggest mistakes. So the first one that flavors, I think, everything is, and it was really over the course of my whole career, including my corporate career, but even before my corporate career, was just around how deeply I didn't take care of myself. And, you know, I say that from certainly a physical perspective, and I'll talk through that, but also from a spiritual perspective, from an emotional perspective, from a mental perspective, that I really didn't take care of myself. I wasn't tuned in and this is up until, I should caveat on this one, up until the last couple of, you know, the last sort of 5 years of my corporate career, once I'd, you know, come out of my burnout and had gone through my journey, which I'll talk about, then I had it handled. But for the entire period before then, from, you know, 18 all the way through to my early 40s, just did not take care of myself. And, you know, by way of history, and I haven't, you know, haven't really talked about this publicly. When I was 21, I got chronic fatigue syndrome, and I was super ill. And back then, this is a long time ago now, we didn't know what chronic fatigue was. You know, now it's very prevalent, getting even more so these days with how stressed everyone is, especially women. But back then, they didn't know what it was. So they were testing me for everything under the sun. I was bedridden for 6 months. And I was very, very, very ill. And just prior to getting chronic fatigue, I'd come out of performing arts college. I'd waitressed all the way through. So I had a ridiculous schedule. I'd gone into doing my audio engineering diploma. Again, waitressing, bartending, doing everything that I need to do to pay the rent whilst I was still studying. And, yeah, got really, really, really sick. So coming out of the back of that in my early 20s, you know, then I had a car accident when I was 24. And it wasn't a really bad car accident, but I'd hurt my back quite badly. And I had had another 6 months where I was sort of rehabbing my back, going to everything from hydrotherapy to physio to chiropractic to get my back, back to being really strong. And when I came out of that, that's when I went into GE. And that's when, you know, they had told me, you know, you can only work sort of 20 hours a week. You need to be sitting down for most of that time. And, you know, I took my first admin job. But all the way through, you know, when I reflect back on my career, you know, when I was at GE and I was, you know, I'd taken a marketing role and then I was promoted to a marketing role across Asia Pacific, my schedule was insane. 18-hour days, 3 weeks out in Asia and the US, 1 week back in Australia, trying to keep my marriage together. And it wasn't just the hours and the workload. When I look back on that now, and my message for all of you and for any women is to really understand and be able to recognize what are the signs of stress. What are the signs of stress? What does your, you know, what does your highly functioning, flourishing, normal look like and feel like? And if you can get that, then you know when you are completely out of that. I think because I hadn't had, I was very healthy as a child, growing all the way up until I got, you know, chronic fatigue. But coming out of the back of that, I really didn't have that, you know, high functioning, flourishing, normal to be my indicator. And especially in that period of time when I was, you know, at GE for 5 years, traveling all over the world, crazy, ridiculous. I had no self-regulation whatsoever. So I would work until 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, then get back up at 6 a.m. for conference calls. You know, so stressed and so wired on coffee and just work that, yeah, couldn't regulate. And I carried that all the way through into my 30s when I had my burnout. You know, and I was 36 when I had my burnout and gave up my job that I'd worked my whole career for, as I've talked about and I've shared that story. But even after that, you know, I went on my 2 months of leave, and I haven't talked about this publicly, and instead of resting and recuperating and getting myself back together in that 2 months, I decided that my partner and I would move in together. So I packed up my house that I'd lived in for 10 years, packed him up and all of our kids and went into a cohabiting relationship, which, you know, moving house, changing jobs, getting sick and moving house, I think, you know, 3 out of the 5 are things on the most stressful life index scale. And I decided to do that as I was meant to be on leave recovering from my burnout. So again, complete lack of attunement with myself, which is why it's one of the things that I worked so hard to get and why it's one of the things that I teach now to, you know, any woman who will listen to me or read my books or come to my courses or be a coach, private coaching client, because it's the number one thing. You know, how well do we know ourselves? How well do we know what we need, and how prepared are we to give that to ourselves? So, you know, it was absolutely, it still is to this day, one of my biggest learnings around finding that sense of, you know, how am I thriving, you know, and what do I need, and how do you do that in a workplace environment was a very hard lesson for me when I came back from, you know, from that burnout experience, came back into a newly created role as the head of strategy, as you guys know, and then had to learn how to regulate, had to learn how to give myself what I needed, you know, while still being in that very high-stress environment. So that's number one. I think I'll go through them, and then let's come back, okay? I think that's going to be the most helpful. So that's number one. Number two, as I was reflecting on this, sitting here looking around me in my home office with, you know, all of my books and my creative tools and reflecting on the life and the business that I have now and looking back at 18 years in corporate life, you know, I was a creative being my whole childhood all the way up through until pretty much the day I entered GE when my creativity just, I can't explain it any other way than got put in a box and put on a shelf and didn't get picked up until the last couple of years of my corporate career when I started writing again. And, like, I have no answer as to why that happened other than I went into a new environment and I complied with what that environment looked like and I just became another version of myself. And all of the creativity that I had, my writing, my performance, being on the stage, dance, music, particularly the writing, just completely vanished out of my life. And I think before then, when I look at what was it that I was searching for, and I think it's very telling for us if we look back to our teenage years, and for some of us, that's not too that's not too long ago, and for some of us, it's a long time ago, which is really helpful, actually, having a 16-year-old, because I look at him and what he's like now, and it's really interesting to look at that as to what I was like and what I was going through when I was 16, highly formative years. But the second biggest mistake that I made was really just letting that creativity go, shutting it down. And in the process of doing that, it was a massive part of myself that got locked down with that, with putting that to the side. And it wasn't until after I came out of my burnout experience, did my yoga teacher training, did my second master's degree in wellness, and then started to think about what's next, and just had this burning desire to start writing again, literally out of the blue, really. And then once I sort of unlocked that door, it all came flooding back, and I haven't stopped, you know, since I started. And that was, gosh, 7 years ago now, you know, when I started writing that first book. So I'll come to the teachable moments at the end, but I'll just go through the journey first, and what they are, and then I'll come back and have some reflections on them. The third one, and for any of you ladies who are, well, I guess in any workplace, this is relevant, certainly in a very patriarchal, bureaucratic, corporate organisation. And I don't think I've ever talked about this, but I know that it's something that is relevant for so many of us as women, is that for a large part of my career, I worried far too much about being liked, and spent far too much energy focusing on winning the popularity contest at work and being liked by my peers, my bosses, even my team, that it was a distraction from the work. And I didn't see it then, especially in that middle management part of my career, before I got to senior executive, it became less so. But certainly, you know, from my mid-20s all the way through mid-30s, that desire to be liked, to fit in, was as important as the work, and in some cases, I think probably more important than the work. And there's a piece of research in a book, I can't even remember what the book's called, where the researcher talks about women's careers at certain points of their careers being based on either being like men or being liked by men. So being like men, women who fit into that masculine mode and who just slot straight into that, or women who potentially show up in more of their feminine traits who are liked by men. And I found that quite staggering when I found that piece of research. And it's very true. And when I look around at, you know, clients, at cultures, at businesses and teams I've been in, I think that's very prevalent, and I think it's something really interesting to reflect on. And I think for me, you know, I've always been I like harmony. I'm all up for a good discussion and a good argument, a good debate, Oh, like, I'm all in on that. But when it comes to relationships, I seek harmony. I seek peace. I don't like, you know, disruption. And when I reflect on it, I think that was a large part of the, you know, needing to be liked. But I think it's also just a very human and a very female thing, especially when we are in, you know, when we're in a workplace where we are the minority, where we are, you know, always very ambitious and very driven. And I felt like that was, you know, that was an absolute core requirement, was that everybody needed to like me for me to be successful. And I don't believe that that's true today, but it certainly was a big driver for me of particularly those really formative years of being a manager. And I can remember once I got a 360 degree review when I took my first director level role at IBM, and I was, God, what was I, 33? Like, I was super young. Like, I was the youngest GM by at least 5 years. One of the only females, big team, like 250 people, and they threw me in, like literally threw me in and said, good luck. And that was the two-year period after that I burnt out completely. And I remember getting a 360 review, and from the direct report team that I'd only been in the company for 18 months, there were a couple of people who were gunning for the role that I had. It was one of the most coveted marketing roles in the global corporation for IBM. I'd been in the company for 18 months. I'd come in through acquisition from PwC, so, like, they didn't like us anyway because we'd come in. I was in the consulting business. They thought we were all, you know, arrogant and consultants and paid a lot of money. And when I got that job and I was literally tapped on the shoulder, my sponsor had worked with the CEO to say, she's got the skills, you need her in this job, and they literally tapped me on the shoulder and put me in that role. It wasn't really even a question as to whether I wanted it, although I did. And the direct report team under me, who'd been with the former director of marketing for 5 years, were not at all happy that I'd gotten the job. I'd gotten it over one of them who had wanted the job, another woman who was the 2IC, and the VP of marketing who was in Asia also didn't want me in the job. So I'd come into this role super young, super fresh, didn't really understand the business yet, and I had a very senior vice president, American guy, who didn't want me in the job. I had a direct report team who didn't want me in the job, and I had 250 people, $50 million, and they told me to go figure it out. And it was a mess. So on top of the whole, you know, work like a dog, single parent, still trying to do my first master's degree, just mayhem situation that I'd put myself in, I now had this job in this situation, and I remember getting my first 360-degree review from my direct team, and there were some positive comments from new people that I'd brought into that team, but there were also some scathing comments, like the worst comments that people would say, and they didn't even, you know, I'd been in the job for like 3 months. And I was gutted, absolutely gutted, and didn't have the management tools, the resilience tools, you know, any of the things that I now teach back then, gosh, a long time ago, 14 years ago, to deal with that. So, you know, this whole piece around being liked then, you know, drove a whole another wave of behaviour that, that just did not set me up for success at all. And, you know, the being liked and the people-pleasing very closely linked together and certainly were for me. So, you know, I look back on that job and there were some decisions that I made very early in that role that not only pissed off my new boss as I was trying to please him in things that he wanted to get done, that were probably against my better judgment, but, you know, trying to people please, be liked, get, you know, get some runs on the board in that new job, but also pissed off my old boss who put me in that job, who was in another area of the company. So, yeah, just big reflection that still impacts me to this day in decisions that I make in terms of how I now show up and what's important and having full integrity in the work that I've been really focused on for the last 10 years or so. So we can chat about that. So that's number three. Which order? I've actually got two more. I've got six, not five. Let's go to number, that one. So the next one, number four, we hear a lot about women feeling like they have the imposter syndrome, where we feel like even though we have all of the skills and all of the talents and all of the experience to do a job, that we still feel like someone's going to tap us on the shoulder and say, hey, you are not qualified to do this. Get out of your seat. That's the imposter syndrome. Yeah, we are qualified, but we still feel like we're not. But one of my reflections on my career for the last job that I had, and again, I've never spoken about this publicly. I will at some point. Just haven't needed to. Is the difference between feeling like you are in the imposter syndrome and actually being an imposter in a role? And when I had my burnout and I left the marketing job, and I'd done marketing for the last 15 years of my career, I was an expert. I was the best in my game. I could have gone into any, I think, company in the world and run their marketing team. I was at the top of my mastery curve as a marketing professional. And the way I negotiated my re-entry after I said, I'm done, can't do this anymore, it's insane, find me a new job. And we actually created, between myself and the CEO, we created one of the jobs that I was trying to do in my marketing role was to do strategy work for the business because I didn't have anyone doing overall strategy. And we agreed that I would come back and do that role, director of strategy, 4 days a week, and I'd take on some other pieces as well. But that would come a little bit later around diversity and organizational culture and change. So I walked into this role as head of strategy, and yes, I had done marketing strategy. And understood very clearly business strategy as it, you know, related to marketing strategy. But I walked into this role as head of strategy and, you know, really, when I really look back on it now, I wasn't qualified to do that job. You know, I wasn't qualified to do that job. I didn't have the deep strategist experience. I didn't understand the IBM business to the level that you would need to understand it, you know, and some people had been in the company for 20 years and still didn't really understand it. I'd been there for, you know, at this point 3 years. Just did not have the depth and breadth that one might need, I felt, to step into that role. And that's not being humble. It's not being anything other than what I think is really, really honest about what that looked like. And I think that sat with me, you know, that I absolutely brought good skills into that job, and I absolutely made a difference over the period that I was in there, more and more so as the time went on. But take imposter syndrome out of it, I actually felt like I was an imposter in that role, you know, for a period of time and in different elements. And even to the day I left, you know, 7 years in, you know, I'd made massive contributions to the company, no question, and huge around in the diversity space, massive around leadership and organizational culture and change, and some very good progress from a strategy perspective. But when I look back on my career parts of that role, that core strategy role. To this day, I still look back and think about, what could I have done differently there? No regrets, don't believe in regrets, but learning in terms of knowing what your real strengths are, knowing where you can add value, and then playing to that. And I think there were certainly parts of that, especially going back after, being burnt out, people knowing you were burnt out, still being the youngest, executive, still being female in a very male-dominated environment. That first 12 months to 18 months coming back after that in that new role where I didn't feel I had the skills, very, very tough. And trying to reorient myself from being an 80-hour-a-week workaholic to working 4 days a week and everything that that entailed, and that was a learning curve as well, which I'm happy to chat about. The fifth one is around treading water for too long. And, I work with a lot of women on building their exit strategies. A lot of my clients come to me for private coaching because they're like, I know there's something else. I don't know what it is yet. Help me figure it out. And when I was in that last sort of 7 years of my corporate career, I actually didn't, until the last couple of years, it never occurred to me that I would go and run my own business. I just didn't think it was something I would ever do. I thought I was a corporate executive through and through. I was, big American corporate. It was in my blood. It was all I knew, and it was all I would ever do. And I'd watched my parents run their own companies, small businesses for most of my life. And I just thought, there's nothing in that for me. I'm always going to be in corporate. And once I'd got an inkling that there really maybe nothing here for me. And the way that I started to get that inkling is I started to look around me, when we'd have our annual performance review discussions with my CEO, and we would have, as an executive in a company, there's all this executive discussion around what's your next role, whose job do you want, this general manager's moving, do you want that? I looked across at all my peer groups, and there were like 25 GM roles in the IBM executive team, and there was not one role that I was interested in, not one. Could have gone back to marketing, and my CEO would have loved me to do that, wasn't interested at all. The diversity, I was head of gender diversity, but the overall diversity role was too junior. They wouldn't even consider putting me in that role. And if I wanted a different diversity role, women's leadership role, I would have had to have moved to the U.S. and with a young child being a single parent, and with his dad in the picture, this just wasn't a possibility. So there were no roles, and that's when I really started to think, what could be next for me? And I spent, look, I think everything is divinely timed. I think we end up in the place we're meant to end up at the time that we're meant to end there, that we're meant to get there. But I do think that the couple of maybe 2 years before I got serious about, okay, let's plan this out, let's really start to think about this, let's gear ourselves toward the skills and the training and the development and everything else that's coming, is that there was perhaps a period there of treading water for too long. In the 7 years I was in that role, 2 years was just getting back on my feet probably. Then there was probably another 2 years in there where I could have done more of different things to progress my path. And then there were 3 years I was very active in working out what's next and how I was going to get there. So that piece around treading water for too long on your path is a really big one. And the last one, there could be 50. The last one, which is especially relevant for, it's relevant for every single person who's listening, but also for anyone who is considering exiting, is if I had one regret, if I did have a regret, it would be that I was not smart enough with my money. You know, and my dad used to say this to me, it was my whole life, I think, but particularly, you know, the more senior I got and everything that came with that, I wasn't smart enough with my money. Like, it's very simple. You know, I earned, you know, really good corporate salary for a long time, and I could have been much, much, much smarter with what I did with that money. And, you know, that doesn't mean that I was silly. You know, I paid my mortgage, paid for school for my kid, paid, you know, was very sensible on that front. But on the other front was also just very frivolous. And whether that was, you know, shoes or too many magazines or too many clothes or, like, whatever, you know, just filtering money away, if I had one regret, that would be it, that I spent 18 years in corporate and could have been much, much smarter with my finances, you know. And I think when you have especially now looking back on it as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, as a writer, and I have a very good business, so it's not about that. But when you are in paid employment, when you have a stable paycheck that you know exactly what is coming in every week, every month, that there's a lot of security, even though nothing is secure, there's a lot of security in that. And, you know, for anyone who is in that situation at the moment and thinking about stepping out into their own business, I wouldn't say my one piece of advice because I've got 50 pieces of advice, but one of the core pieces of advice is you save every single cent that you can save. And I did that in the last couple of years, you know, certainly the last 2 years, because I knew I was going to go, you know, before I went on long service leave, because that's how I exited, which we'll talk about coming up in the exit strategy module in about 3 weeks, I think. But yeah, like, just to be super smart with your money, and get advice if you need to get advice, get support, get an advisor, do whatever you need to do. But at its most basic, know where your money is going. You know, there's lots of apps you can get now that track, you know, your finances. I'm doing this at the moment, just tracking every cent. Where is it going? And does it need to go there? And where would it better serve you? Because being smart with your money is all about getting financial freedom. And getting financial freedom is all about getting freedom for whatever it is that you want to do. So, yeah, if there was one regret, if I only had one regret, that would be it. I wish I had been much, much more frugal with the money when, you know, that corporate salary was coming in, because you learn that very clearly when you start to run your own business. So that's me talking for 40 minutes. There's six things. I'm trying to think if there was, when I really sat and thought about this, they were the big six for me. I mean, lots of other stuff that I talk about that you guys already have access to, you know, as we go through the toolkit that I talk about and that we'll, you know, have questions about as we go through. You know, I thought about things, do I wish I had a more solid career plan? No, I didn't, because directionally I knew where I was headed at all the moments where I needed to. So, you know, I was, you know, and I talked to you guys about, you know, on a scale of zero, no plan, to 10-year plan, to being somewhere in the middle that you have a directional view, and that's where I was, and I was happy with that, even though I had lots of arguments with lots of people that wasn't the right place to sit. And I was thinking about, you know, there were other things in there. I guess the only other thing that I would say, and this is a very personal one, is for a number of years when my son was very little, I was in the height of my career. And not just in the height of my career, but the height of the striving and striving part of my career, you know, my early 30s. And he didn't suffer. He was always very well taken care of. He was very loved. He didn't spend a lot of time in daycare or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, he spent time with my mum and with his other, you know, grandmother. His dad was very involved and all the rest of it. But I was very stressed pretty much until I came out of my burnout. I was very, very stressed. And I know, like, you can't be, we had a lot of quality time. I worked from home a lot and I had flexibility, but I also worked a lot of hours. And I had very, very high stress levels and didn't yet have the tools to deal with that. So on reflection, I mean, I look at him now. I don't talk about him very much, but he is one of the most balanced, together people that I know, child or not child. He teaches me things every day. Great attitude, very optimistic, great mindset. And I look back on the first 5 years of his life and how stressed I was during that period. I think, oh, my God, how did you turn out so good? I think one of the reasons is because when I came out of that period and I started doing, you know, all of my research into positive psychology, is that he was my guinea pig for everything. If I wanted to, you know, do research around growth mindset and positive mindset, I'd do it on him, and he was like, what, 5, 6, 7 when I started. You know, we used to meditate together at night, and all of the practices, you know, strengths. I did strength work with him as a child. I went into his fifth grade classroom and did strength with the whole year. So, you know, like, I know that the tools that I teach now had a massive impact on him from, you know, 5, 6, 7 and onwards. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, he is the way that he is. But I also look back on that first 5 years and I think, oh, my God, you know, like, if he had have turned out and needed a lot of therapy, I would have completely understood, looking back, at just how, like, I was just a stress head. You know, I used to walk around all the time saying, I'm so stressed. And, you, like, now you would never hear those words come out of my mouth. Even on the weekend, I was talking to some, you know, I'd seen some people and they said I was speaking at a gig last week and some people that I knew but not too well came up to me and said, oh, how are you? Are you really busy? And I said, well, you know, I actually don't like to say busy, but yeah, I've got great stuff going on. I'm really happy with the work that I'm doing. It's really purposeful. And they're kind of like, oh, wow, like, everybody just says they're busy. So I don't speak like that anymore because our words are our energy and they create our lives. But back then, you know, I remember putting him in the car to go to childcare when he was in childcare and just crying, 7:30 in the morning, just being out of my mind, stressed out. So, yeah, that if there was a number 7, that would absolutely be there. And it links back to the first one, which is my underlying message for all of the work that I do is that, like, we have to take care of ourselves. And to take care of ourselves, we have to know ourselves. We have to be deeply attuned to who we are, what we want, how we feel, what we need, what our ultimate sense of thriving, flourishing, what does that look like? What does that feel like? So that we know when we're not there. And for many women that I work with, they have no clue what that looks and feels like, because their state of normal is what mine used to be, which is like a hot mess. And it's only till we start doing this work. And, like, that work never stops. You know, I've just started working with a new person. She's, a yoga teacher. She's a very unique fusion of yoga teacher, psychologist, naturopath, spiritual person. She's amazing. So, and she practices Ayurvedic medicine, which is, you know, what I studied in my yoga teacher training. And I've just started working with her to go on a deep journey of, like, that next level of health and vitality and well-being and groundedness. So, like, it never stops. But we have to know where are we at on that scale between flourishing and languishing. And, like, what's our goal? And what are we prepared to do to to achieve that? How much effort are we prepared to put in? Because it doesn't just happen, you know, by osmosis, unfortunately. So, 45 minutes. I'm going to stop talking now. And I would, yeah, just appreciate any reflections, any comments, any questions on what I've just said. I know there's only a couple of us on. And there'll be another, you know, another, I think there's four women who'll listen to this after the recording. So for you lovely ladies, Katie, Sharon, Tegan, if you can talk, yeah, reflections, questions, comments. Hopefully someone can talk. Star 6 to come off mute.
Hi, it's Sharon here, if no one else is speaking.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, I thought now everyone had left me.
No, no, I kept hitting star 6. I hit it about 7 times. It wouldn't work.
Mm.
I am... No. Look, obviously some of that resonated with me, not all of it, because I've never had super, super senior jobs and been under that pressure, nor am I a mother. So I can't talk about those ones, but 5 and 6 are mine. So thank you very much for that. 5 especially, which Katie and you and I were talking about before Tegan joined and before we became officially on the call. You know, and I've started reading things about portfolio careers rather than trying to offer myself up as a single entity, to offer myself up as a series of things that I can do for people and perhaps go in it that way. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. It'll take me another year or maybe through my next job to get to that point.
Mm.
I'm not expecting to just jump out and be, you know, gainfully employed 60 hours a week. So, yeah. And money, I'm like you. I'm not great with money, very bad with it, in fact. But, other than that.
Well, that, I mean, those two things, you know, about, like, what are the small steps, you know, so that you're not treading water, which you're doing.
Yeah.
Through, you know, doing this program and, you know, there'll be other things. And really investigating, portfolio careers is what, well, it's here, but it's also the wave that's coming, right?
Yes.
And working out what would those portfolios be? You know, if there were 5 things you wanted to do, what would they be?
Mm. And I'm still working through that.
Yeah, and that's exciting. I mean, that's where I started. I mean, I was pretty clear that, well, I was very clear. My work is, like, I'm here to support women. That's why I'm here, you know, other than, you know, being a parent. That's why I'm here. I'm here to help women along their journey. So I knew that was clear. I knew I'd coach. I knew I'd speak. I knew I'd write. And I knew there was potential that I'd do sort of, you know, more diversity work and work around leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And I also knew I'd want to do it in my own business. I didn't want to go and consult or contract
mm-hmm.
In role. So, like, there were lots of clues for me around how that would come together. And then I took my sabbatical, you know, I took my 9-month sabbatical to go and figure it out.
Yeah.
So I had that safety net, which as a, you know, single parent was super important to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, for some people they don't need that. They've got, you know, they've saved up enough money or whatever, yeah, or they're stepping into consulting work or contracting work. And I see a lot of women I work with, that's how we set it up, you know, go and land a 2-day-a-week contract, and then you've got money coming in and some financial stability while you go and work out the rest of it. So there's, like, so many different ways.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that on the coaching calls, yeah, as we get into exit strategy and creating change in the last couple of weeks, if that's helpful. Sharon?
Yeah, no, thank you.
And on the money part, look, the only thing that I would say is for anyone who wants to get better, track every cent. Stop spending on discretionary items just for a period of time so you can see, you know, like I said to my son recently, just as an exercise, we're on financial lockdown, which means if it's not a necessity, like a real necessity, we're not buying it, you know, just for a couple of months. And I just want to do an experiment and see what happens, yeah, around finances and management of those finances. So I would say stop spending on discretionary items for a period of time, track everything, and set some goals. You know, set some goals, especially, you know, if there's change on the horizon, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a big one. we have so much shame about our finances, right? I mean, even me saying that, it's like, oh, you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't say that you're bad with money. But so many of us are. We just, you know, there's money coming in. We're okay. We can pay for everything. You know, fine. Don't worry about it.
Yes.
So I think it's a big conversation amongst women, for sure. So thanks for sharing.
Can I be heard? I don't know if I can.
Yes, you can.
Oh, it's Katie. Hi, I'm so sorry. I had to dial in again because I couldn't get myself off mute.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I was just wrapping up with Sharon. We were just talking about
I heard that. Thank you. That was so valuable. Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you, and obviously something which you know about yourself already, but I'll say it anyway because I appreciate it, that, you know, just to raise all these so-called imperfections in your own life are just so, they're just really received so beautifully. So thank you for sharing what I imagine some of that was not easy to share. So thank you very much.
You're here.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I must admit, I find it quite easy. Like, I'm very transparent. It's all about let's be real and have real conversations because I'm sick of the bullshit.
Yeah.
But the only thing that usually goes through my mind is, does anyone care? Like, is this useful or is this just me rambling about stuff that no one cares about? So,
I really appreciate that. No, it's really interesting that you've said that because I can imagine that you, but from somebody, I think that it does matter because for us, particularly through this career coaching course, I think it is important because, it's not necessary, but it's lovely that you've done it because it just makes us realise that, I mean, you've been so successful in your life, but you've also had so many hurdles along the way, and that just makes you human. And it's actually, I mean, we already know that you are anyway, but it's just lovely to have that sharing. It is, you know, especially in an intimate setting. And I personally, I've heard you speak before, and I don't think you remember meeting me, but I have met you in person briefly, and I've heard you speak before at an Inspiration Day in Sydney. And you were quite transparent, and I know that you are with a lot of things that you share, even, you know, in your writing. I mean, you've written books and you've written amazingly things, you know. But it's not easy ever, I don't imagine, to at any level to share, you know, to ever be completely vulnerable about things. And I personally, I don't know how you feel, but for me, I imagine it might have been personal, vulnerable to share personal stuff about how you felt about your son, you know, and being high level in your career. Because there's so much that women talk about, you know, with children and rising up and so-called shame, neglecting of their children. That's a hard thing to talk about, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, I mean, just to be clear, I don't think I ever neglected him. That's not a
note
with that. But certainly, and he always came first.
Yeah.
But how you show up inside a relationship, even if you're there, is everything, right? I'm all about the energy that you bring, and I absolutely know that there were moments, more than a few moments, that my stress, my emotional well-being, or lack thereof, of course it would have impacted him, of course.
Mm.
You know, and I have clients all the time who say to me, oh, my God, like, I was the worst mother on the weekend. I was so stressed. I did this. I yelled. I had a girlfriend over on Saturday night, and she said to me, oh, my God, Megan. She said, you know, her husband's working really hard. He's on deadline, and she's got two young kids, and she's trying to run a business. And she said, I was just the worst version of myself as a parent this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we have to have these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have to
stop saying
that it's all, you know, Instagram photos, because it's not. It's just complete bullshit.
you know.
I know. There are so many. Yeah, that's a whole another topic. But yes, I'm certainly all about realness with who I am as a person. But yeah, I mean, social media doesn't depict it enough at all, of course. But you know, it's interesting. I've come from it from a different perspective because not in my. In my own personal life, but when I was being was growing up, my father was an incredibly successful lawyer, so he was hardly ever home, really. But it's really interesting that in my later years and his later years, how he has apologised for that when I haven't actually felt the need for him to do that at all, because I always really understood who he was as a person and why he did it. And I just have so much respect for him as a person and his choices and how intelligent he is. You know, like so many things, I adore my father. He's one of my best friends. So, but it's been very interesting for me as his daughter, I suppose because I've been through a lot of hard things in my own life, so we've become a lot closer too. But his need to apologise to me for not being around at times when he felt he should felt important to him, and it was interesting because it wasn't so much for me. So it's just, I don't know, it's just interesting. I don't know whether times have changed or anyway, that was just a personal thing that came up as you were sharing something. I was just remembering a conversation with my dad. Yeah.
Thank you.
The other thing that I found important, that I thought was really lovely that you shared openly was that you were in a role where you felt that you weren't, or that you, I can't remember your exact words, but that you felt that you weren't fully qualified or experienced for it.
Yeah.
To be really honest about that, I think it's really important. It takes me back to something in my own career where I was in a job which I was promoted into, this is years ago now, when I was working in HR, and I never felt that I was qualified for that job, but I never said that I quit it before I was honest about that, if that makes sense. And it's really it's very interesting, and thank you for sharing that because it was sort of gratifying for me to realise that, it's so important, isn't it, to be so honest with ourselves with anything that we take on in life, really. Like, is this really what, is this really good and right and true, you know?
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Anyway, thank you very much, Megan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. That makes it worthwhile. Thank you. Tegan, I don't know if you're still with us, hun, or if you've dropped off, or if you can't talk. Star 6 if you want to come off mute. No,
it might just be you and I.
That's all right. Well,
time
Sharon,
to go.
Was there anything else you wanted to chat about or anything else that's come up or just any questions that you've got?
No, look, that's great. I've got to catch up, as I think I said to you, because I was sick. I need to catch up on listening to a few of the calls. But, no, despite not being able to attend the calls, I'm finding it very valuable just to kind of give me that kick along that I need.
Yeah, awesome.
And, I'm a bit slow to act, but I'll get there.
That's all right. And, look, you know, lifetime access, right? I keep saying it because
thank you.
The content's not going anywhere. And everyone's at different stages and, you know, you'll be where you need to be. Just small steps. Small actions. Well, then I will wrap the call right on the hour.
Thank you.
And I hope that that's been helpful. And for anyone who's listening who wasn't here, if you have questions or there's stuff you want to discuss from this, just come to me. Just email me, and I'm really happy to come back to you because I know there might have been things that might come up after listening to me, you know, riff on those things. So feel free to come back to me. And again, just please, this is just for you guys. Please don't share the call.
No.
I really hope that it has been helpful and that it serves some part of your journey. So thank you, ladies, for tuning in live. And, I'll talk to you all on the next call.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.